fire inside cannot be denied. Said someday you'll find.
I know I may be getting old, but The Platters, Paul Raby's birthday was today, Smokies in Your Eyes. Those are the days when you could play a song and just dance all close, and I'll stop right now. But that was always ready to hear Little Platters, especially on days when we're getting very serious about what's happening in Ferguson. But that is happening part of this day in history, so Paul Raby born on this day. We are going to continue our conversation. The Reverend Kevin Slayton remains with us, pastor of the New Waverly United Methodist Church. Adar Ayira joins us once again. She's in the studio again, project manager for More in the Middle campaign for Associated Black Charities, a facilitator and analyst at the Baltimore Racial Justice Action, a program of Fusion Partnerships. Tawanda Jones joins us once again in our studios. She is Tyrone West's sister, and Diana Butler is once again in our studio. Tyrone West, aunt, good to see all of you here in the studio again. And this hour, we're going to continue our look at Ferguson, where we're going to talk about it as people relate to it here in Baltimore, about the rally taking place tonight that ties together things that happen in Baltimore to what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri, and which is why Tawanda and her aunt Diana Butler are here in the studio. You all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org, our new address, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. I promise our callers from this hour we're going to get to the calls, and we are going to do that in just a couple of moments. Welcome our guests here, and we will be hearing, we think, from Def Poe, a recording artist from St. Louis who has been behind the scenes from Ferguson. As soon as he calls in and we get to him, we will break in and have him join us for a live discussion from Ferguson. And tomorrow we will be having state senators and others who are leaders of the community in Ferguson joining us by phone from Ferguson to really get in-depth what's happening behind the lines in Ferguson, Missouri. All that coming up tomorrow. But Def Poe, we hope, is calling in today, and they'll be part of this hour's discussion. So please join us here, 410-319-8888. Welcome, everybody. Good to have you in the studio. Good
Thank
to see you all again.
Good to be here.
Let me get rid of this so I can see Diana better. There we are. Good. So let me begin by doing as I promised with our listeners. Let me go right to the phones and get our listeners who are holding up the last hour, because all these discussions are connected, and hear what they're saying. 410-319-8888. Let's go to line four. Ernest from West Baltimore has been holding on for a long time. Ernest, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
The notion that black people don't testify in court against other black people and don't tell is ridiculous. I used to work on the hotlines, drug hotline, and also the Metro Crime Stoppers line at the end of my career. This was a 24-hour operation. People called all the time. On the Metro Crime Stoppers line, the people would get paid for giving information. But even if they didn't get paid, if you go to any court, circuit court, district court, you'll find black people testifying against people that act in a thuggish way. So that's just ridiculous there. But the problem is, when you're a law enforcement officer, we think that under the false notion that they're to protect and serve, you can see that's not true. It's never been true. But if a police officer, armed police officer, shoots an unarmed person, black person, 18-year-old boy, then something should happen to him. He should be prosecuted. And even now, this officer who hasn't said a word, people has contributed, white people, and probably some black people, about $40,000 to his defense fund, knowing that 18-year-old black boy wasn't. Let me explain a thing to you. The reason why the police didn't know he had, they call it a strong-arm robbery at the store, because it had not been reported. No,
right.
Nobody called in a robbery in progress. If they had called in a robbery in progress, then all the police that were in service would have responded. His action to stop that boy was because he was walking in the middle of the street. It wasn't a main thoroughfare. From what I've been watching, it was like a side street. He told him to get out the street. Now, the boys was wrong. because they should have said, yes, sir, just get out the street. Because you never know if you're going to meet a Mark Furman or Officer Friendly. You just get out the street. But they kept walking and kept talking and explaining why they was walking. And then the police officer got angry, agitated, and backed up and tried to, they said that he tried to grab Michael Brown through the window with his hand. Now, and then they come back and say, well, he tried to take his gun. He could not try to take his gun if the gun was in a holster, because in modern day, even before I retired, I had a holster on that I wore all the time, right, that you just couldn't take the gun out the holster. You couldn't get it out. It's a special maneuver that had to be made so you could get your gun out the holster, because the police had been shot in Baltimore by somebody taking a gun out the holster. So the other thing is that officer never called a Signal 13.
Right.
He never called a Signal 13.
So what Ernest is raising here are some important issues. And I just, before we go back to the three-year-old issue that we were talking about earlier, and nobody testifying against the children who were shot in the streets here, but we can come back to that. But this going to what Ernest was saying, what was reported in the New York Times this morning, and it does relate to Baltimore as well, in terms of where stories get murky, and then this becomes the issue of the moment, because rather than the larger issues that we're facing, because the story at the moment is murky, as it was with Tyrone's death. You know, the official stories and the stories in the press, what happened, they got murky, even the eyewitnesses we talked to here on the program. And you look at what happened with Michael Brown. The moment he was shot is from a make up a word, is being murkified. It's getting confused. So this is where, you know, so it was justified for a policeman to make the shot, because Michael Brown was coming at him. Well, his hands were up, one hand was higher than the other. Well, maybe that was because he was shot in one of his arms already, and he was turning around to give up. So so let's talk about what happens here when we get to these murky points in the press for the larger population to wrestle with what goes on. Tara, you have, Adara, you have that look on your face. I'll let you start. I always know something's coming when I see you look like that.
I'll just say this, that this is why it is so very important, particularly in our media, that anchors and that other people reporting the news have a good understanding of history and an anti-racist worldview. Because what has happened, even here with the Tyrone West family, with every time when we read about one of these instances happening, is we deal with it as if it is the only time that this has ever happened. We don't deal with it as a pattern. We do not acknowledge the cultural racism, the way that black people are seen, the way that they have been demonized, the way that black men and increasingly and historically black women have been viewed, and how that frames the narrative that becomes the narrative of the situation. Everything now is going toward the officer. You know, we have to rally around, we have to protect him. This guy was a thug, he was doing this, he was doing that. We are just wrapping ourselves in all sorts of convolutions trying to craft a story that absolves this officer. Now, by some intervention, he may be, you know, absolved. But Mark, how we're going with this is continuing the rhetoric around what black men are, thugs, what police people are, heroes, and that there is no gray space in between. And it is in the gray spaces that we are continuing with those traditional and stereotypical narratives.
So let me connect these two places here for a moment, Ferguson and Baltimore, talk about what we're talking about today. And I think that one of the things we touched on last hour was that there are stories that almost every person I know, person of color I know, be they Mexican-American or African-American, have in this country of being stopped and what mm-hmm. happens when they're stopped. Mm-hmm. This morning in the New York Times, there was a story about Eric Holder and Obama, and the story about Eric Holder being stopped by the police when he was a federal prosecutor because he was running down the street not to be late to meet his family at the theater. And, you know, and so he stopped. Why is a black man running down the streets of Washington, D.C., even if he was dressed to the nines and trying to meet his family there? The story, and I'm going to let you, just very quickly, just want to get this out. I want you to tell your story, our engineer this morning. Our engineer Andre Melton was talking about his story when he and his friends were humiliated for no reason, just driving through East Baltimore one evening. I'll let him get on the mic for a moment just to tell this story. It's about Baltimore, so we can kind of wrestle with what is going on and how do we change it. Adar, talk about what happened to you. Then I might have Andre, our engineer, get on the mic here and talk about what happened to him.
Absolutely. And this, my story, I want to contextualize it this way. The other thing that we've been hearing a lot about is this whole respectability politics. You know, that if only people weren't doing this, weren't dressed this way, weren't wearing a hoodie, weren't running, weren't breathing, weren't doing whatever while black, then, of course, there's nothing for you to be afraid of because this would never happen to you. I was driving back home from my organization's Associated Black Charities Gala on June 15th of this year. It was around 1:10 in the morning, and I was about a couple of blocks from home. I saw flashing lights behind me, and I was on a two-lane street. I immediately pulled over thinking, oh, okay, this police officer has to go past me. The police officer pulls over, comes to my car, and says that he wants my driver's license and my registration. I said, fine. Officer, why am I being stopped? He says, because your headlights are off. Now, again, this was 1-something in the morning. I said, no, my headlights are on. Look at the dashboard. See the dashboard headlights on. So he looks at that. He walks to the front of my car, and my headlights are on. He comes back to my car, and he says, so you just turned them on, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Said, no, officer, they've been on since my ignition went in the car. And then he had a flashlight, which he was shining in my face, and then he shines it up and down my dress. And says, "Oh, so where are you coming from? You've been partying. You came from a party. You're a party girl." I said, "Actually, I'm coming from work." Well, where are you coming from? And he kind of chuckled, like, you know, "Oh yeah, work. I know what you've been doing." And I told him I was coming from the ABC gala, and he says, "Oh, ABC, the TV station." I said, no, Associated Black Charities Gala. There were 1,100 people here, many of them, I'm sure, who could attest to the fact that I was there. And so he left me in my car, went to check my driver's license, and he also told me that he checked for warrants to see whether there was a warrant out on me. He brought back this yellow sheet of paper, and at that point I was starting to say to him, wait a minute, I'm not going to get a ticket. I've done nothing wrong. And he says, no, this is just documenting your contact with police. And then he looks at me and says, now, do you have any questions? In a way that I knew I'd better not have any questions. And I just said, no, I don't. And he looks at me and he says, yeah, okay, then have a nice evening.
And I think that, to me, when you first told me that story, what hit me so quickly was that just calling you a party girl and the absolute disrespect for a woman and shining his flashlight up and down you was just like that's the kind of thing that happens daily that we do not even get to the press because nobody was shot, nobody was hit, nobody was arrested. But let me do this.
Okay.
Andre, very quickly, could you just jump on mic and just very quickly tell what happened to you in East Baltimore?
About 5 years ago, I was going to a birthday party and me and my friends got pulled over. My friend at the time was driving a Grand Marquis, and the officer asked, could he search the car? And they had us on the curb outside of Orleans Street for about half an hour. And then he asked, did my friend have any warrants on him? And he actually did have a warrant on him for a failure to appear in court. And then they towed his car, and then I had to actually drive his car back home, and then they dismissed the case.
But, I mean, the fact that, again, you weren't speeding.
No.
People were just driving.
We're just driving.
Four young black men in the car in a Grand Marquis pulled over. And, of course, the issue then will become, oh, he had already had a warrant, whatever the appeal was. But that's not the issue. The issue is, why pull over four innocent men just driving their car through the street to go to a party, doing the speed limit, not bothering anybody?
And here's the thing. When people talk about privilege or who doesn't have privilege, I am a very privileged person, I think. You know, and I own that privilege. But I'll tell you this. At 1:20 in the morning, I had no privilege. The thing that I knew about that police officer was that that police officer would lie. And because he lied about pulling me over, he lied officially when he gave me this sheet of paper and had that be part of public record, that I was stopped for a traffic violation that never happened. So in that moment, Mark, what I knew is that if this police person would lie about pulling me over, he would lie about anything. So you cannot develop that relationship with the community and then on the other hand come back and say, well, why don't people come out and tell me about this person or that person? Why don't they believe me when I testify in court? They don't, because they know that you will lie, because you have.
And folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts and stories, and I want to turn now to Tawanda Jones to talk about the rally they're having tonight and the West family is having, Tyron West family having, in solidarity with the Ferguson, with people in Ferguson, Missouri, and why it's kind of critical for your family to do this, and why you've taken up, because you've taken many mantles since your brother was killed.
Yes.
Whether it was standing up at the Gaza demonstration and speaking, and now standing up to this. What's this connection?
The connection is basically God guides my path, and through this terrible ordeal that my brother shouldn't even ever experience, I'm just praying that what we're doing can just educate the community and perhaps save a life. And I just wish somebody was there to save my brother's life, and nobody wasn't. And I just wanted to, you know, just be the voice of all voices of police brutality, because it's not right. Anybody can be stopped, victimized, and brutally killed, and then they just get away with it. And it's disgusting. And so that's why we're out here doing it. And last week was real powerful. We met up at in front of the Baltimore Police Department downtown, the main headquarters, and we went all through downtown Baltimore to City Hall, to courtrooms, like everywhere. We were all through, and it was beautiful. And it was different races, ethnic groups out there. It was so beautiful.
Walking together.
Yes, just walking together. And solidarity. It was so beautiful.
And to me, that's part of the beauty of what you were just describing. That's what's also happening in Ferguson, and not reporting as well, that's happening in Baltimore as well, is that when these demonstrations are taking place around these issues, that it is being led by African-American people in response to what's happening in the community, but other people are coming out in solidarity to walk and say this has to end.
Yes.
That's happening in Ferguson. That's happening here. As we reported yesterday, in Ferguson, a 90-year-old woman, a Holocaust survivor, who will be coming on the show, we hope soon, was arrested in Ferguson to stand up and say this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that's an important point.
And the saddest thing, what you people fail us to realize, is that it could be you. It could be your mother, your sister, your brother, your uncle, your cousin. It could be anybody just pulled over. Like, you need to know that these serial repeat offenders are still on the street being paid. They could pull me over, they could pull you over, and you could be brutally killed in a second for no reason, and you leave this earth wondering why did I have to die by some people that's supposed to serve and protect you. It's disgusting.
Did you want to say something, Diana, before we go to the phones?
Yes, I just would like to say, in our march this past year for justice for Tyrone, we just wanted the community to know that this is happening. This is real. My family is experiencing this. This is real pain and real suffering. The last image that my family saw of Tyrone was on a gurney. He was gray, swollen. His face was distorted. He was dead. I would not want another mother to ever have to see her child to die like that, brutally beaten, and no one has taken responsibility, culpability, just want us to believe that my healthy son had a bad heart. They lied to my family from day one, and they're still lying to my family. But until we get the truth, We will continue this fight for justice for Tyrone. All we want is the truth. Why my child is dead.
You know, I what you're saying is important. One of the things that I pull from this as well is thinking about your family, the Tyrone West family. And one of the things to me, how it's tied to Ferguson is that the demonstrations in Ferguson, things like this usually end up dissipating. It's not dissipating. Mm-hmm. People are still out in the streets en masse during the day and at night, walking the streets peacefully, mm-hmm. walking the streets saying no. Your family, for a year, over a year now, mm-hmm. has come out every week yes. with the entire family, people in solidarity with you out there. You've not stopped it over a year after this has happened. So, I mean, I think that what this says to me, and you've seen this stuff happen, I think, what I'm discovering is around America, this is going on. Yes. And that's why I think there's a momentum around this, as tragic as these deaths are, to confront it, face it, and change it. Mm-hmm.
Every city is one death away from being a Ferguson.
Amen.
And most cities already are.
Yes.
We just have not heard about it.
Yes.
Let's try to get a caller in here before we go back to our guests here and kind of pull out more of what's going on and the questions we can raise. Everybody, I want you to raise questions for the families here, for Adara Yero, who's in the studio, and the Reverend Kevin Slayton, 410-319-8888. And I'll say about Kevin Slayton, who I've known for a long time, he's not one of those preachers who sits in the study and hides. He's out in the community marching and working to change things every day as well. 410-319-8888. There's a batch of young preachers in this town now who are going to be part of that change. I think it's very important that force is coming in Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is number here. Kadria, you've been holding on for a long time. You're on the air.
Thank you and good morning, sir.
Good morning.
First of all, black-on-black violence is no difference, and it does not exceed white-on-white violence. It's just reported more. Next to black preacher, I am. I'm not even going to apologize because it's just the truth. They are the chief proponents of white supremacy as they propagate purity, holiness, whiteness, which equal whiteness of the Caucasian people. This is very evidenced by the inclination, over the top inclination of our women, especially to look and some of us to act like Caucasian people. To respect all respect to the Caucasian man and you, Mark Steiner, who told the truth about the portrayal of the oppressed as the perpetrators instead of the victims. Many people see the connections of these things, black men I'm talking about, and the many black men that have stood up for us in this country. Their voices are silenced, their messages are glossed over, and they're accused of separation and hate, which is eaten up by our people simply because the master said, don't follow him or he's a bad man. Marches, protests are not the solution, as we can see after all these years. The only solution I see is mental, physical, religion, separation, self-policing, which includes vigilantes, prosecution of our own by our own according to the old laws, which include castration for rape,
Well, I'm sorry, we do have to take a break. We're about up against the half hour. We have to take a break. I'm going to have to turn this over to Sandy Mallory for a few minutes to talk about the encouraging you all to come to WEA now because we're raising money to make sure the kids who have no books, no pencils, and what they need that they have when the school year starts. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Walk on. And walk on by. Please, oh, walk on.
Welcome back, and that, of course, Isaac Hayes, we went out with and came back with. Walk On By, one of the great songs. He was born on this day in 1942 in Covington, Tennessee, and we lost him much too early in the year 2008, one of the great talents in our life. So, Isaac Hayes. So we come back to our panel here. I don't think Tefpo is not with us yet, right? He's not here, but he's about to be here. So we're going to talk to him when he does come in. 410-319-8888 is the number. We are here with Tawanda Jones and Diana Butler, sister and aunt to Tyrone West. There's a rally tonight at what time, Tawanda?
At 6 p.m. at City Hall.
And this is a rally to unite people around what's happening in Baltimore and Ferguson together, and not separating the two. Reverend Kevin Slayton is remaining with us, pastor of the New Waverly United Methodist Church, Adair Ayira, project manager of the More in the Middle campaign for Associated Black Charities, and facilitator and analyst at Baltimore Racial Justice Action, a program of fusion partnerships. The number here is 410-319-8888. Before we go to the calls and go back to our guests, I'm asking the guests to join in on this part of the conversation as well. We have with us on the phone Tefpo, who is an artist, an entertainer from St. Louis, who has been in Ferguson, tweeting the stuff on Twitter from him has been amazing. And when you want to see the truth of what's going on in Ferguson, it's in that alternative media taking place. It's not in the main media. You can see what's going on. And Tefpo, welcome. Good to have you here on the Mark Steiner Show.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad you're here. So the things that you have been showing and others have been showing from Ferguson itself, from the community's point of view, I mean, it's dramatically different than what people are seeing on major TV.
Yeah, completely. The media is there to catch a certain aspect of what's going on. And I'm there to catch, you know, that aspect and even more of it, you know, just a more well-rounded 360 view of what's going on.
So tell us a bit about some of the things I've seen from some of the things you've posted, just even those. One that just stuck with me because it really hit me was just all these people standing in front of a police line, hands in the air. A young woman in front of the police, her hands in the air, protesting for justice, and then immediately arrested, turned around, handcuffed. So tell us what's going on. What's behind that? What's happening we're not seeing?
You know, what is going on, it's very aggressive policing. I've been an activist for a few years now. I've seen some pretty big things. I've been on the front lines of the fast food workers trying to raise minimum wage. I've been in the trenches in some of the hardest communities that there are in my city, registering people to vote and shot at registering people to vote. But this right here is something totally different. This is a different monster. And it's aggressive policing. They will shoot. They will use tear gas. Some people have found information to suggest that it's not even tear gas they're using. A lot of people are saying that it's mustard gas. It's very disheartening to witness, and as an activist, it almost sucks the life out of me and makes me not even want to go out and help organize the people because it's something that I don't know how to organize against sometimes.
It feels and sounds like from things I've seen on your Twitter and others that this is almost spontaneous. It's not necessarily done. There's not necessarily a leadership, but people are just out there and not stopping. That's the thing. You all in Ferguson are not stopping. You're still out there in hundreds and thousands every day.
Yeah, and more people are coming every day. What's going on in that area is the police have lost power. And I'm going to say that and really tell you what I mean by that. What's going on is if an area that has a history of the police force abusing the people, abusing their power, taking advantage of the situation. And it's been going on for quite some time. In St. Louis, especially in North County, we have a history and a culture that black men don't drive there at night. You know, if I had a friend that lives in North County 2 weeks ago and he called me and said, hey, I need a ride home. What time is it? Oh, it's 10:30. I'm going to have to think about that one, man. I may not be able to come get you. But and that's just how it is. There's a lot of speed traps because the initial goal is to get you in the system any kind of way that they can. So when they profile you and pull you over, there's a legitimate excuse as to why they can just lock you up. So, you know, oh, let's put a bunch of tickets on this guy. You eventually don't pay the tickets because you're mad that you constantly keep getting speeding tickets or irrelevant tickets for, like, you know, maybe your headlight is out. And
do we lose Tef? Jeff Bowie, we lost him, so we'll get him right back. But I mean, what are your thoughts and responses? And as soon as he gets back home, we'll bring him right back onto the air. But if you have something to say to him, please, I want you all to jump in and talk with him as well. But what are your thoughts? Tawanda, what were you just thinking? I was watching you as he was speaking.
It's just heartbreaking. It just reminds me of back when Dr. Martin Luther King was walking the streets with peaceful protests, and they was just killing us and lynching us and things of that nature. It's just horrible. And I just wanted to also say that I'm also have some good news for us, my brother, Case. You know we got the Independent Review Board, which
yes.
was foolishness.
Which we're going to come back, by the way, yes. in the next week and look at that report invite you back along okay. with Jackie Robarge and others to look at that report in depth. So
yes,
yeah.
but besides that, we got good news that thank God that now our case has moved to the federal level. They accepted it, and that's good because right now, especially with the police big brutality thing that's going on everywhere and how intimidating they could be, I wouldn't want it nowhere in the city or, you know, so they can come in and basically harass the witnesses and things like that because these were some good witnesses that were real credible, and thank God for these witnesses that said what they saw, but they were literally being called the N-words as well, get back in the house, this could happen to you, so thank God that they wouldn't have to endure, you know, this type of foolishness if it's on another level. They wouldn't have to worry about all that.
And Tefpo is back with us. And please, folks, I want you to jump into this conversation. Tefpo, let me just ask the question. I'm glad you got back to us. But one of the things that we're hearing from the police is that shots were fired at the police, Molotov cocktails were thrown at the police, which is why they responded with volleys of rubber bullets and gas. What is it from your perspective? What are you seeing that's different than that?
Well, this is the thing, and I have to explain this to people, so paint this picture. Okay, I've lived in this community all my life. My mother still lives not very far from where a lot of the violence is going on. I mean, a lot of the protesting is going on. And here's the reality of the situation. You have an overwhelming amount of peace protesters, people that are trying to do it the right way. In the midst of that, you do have a few bad seeds. And these bad seeds come from various places. They don't just come from the community. Some people have flown in from different cities to kind of make this their Armageddon moment. You know, this is my big me versus the armored trucks and the police state moment. A lot of us in the community don't encourage these individuals, and we've actually had conflict with these individuals because we feel as if, you know, when the guns come out, they're going to aim at our children, they're going to aim at us, and you get out of Dodge and go back home. And, you know, there's a few young brothers out there attempting to engage with the police in the wrong way, but once again, it's not a ginormous pocket. These people are maybe 1% of the actual protesters, and I think that the police and the media use this as an excuse. They take the small fraction of people instead of using actual real police tactics to pull them out of the crowd. They say, oh, we can't determine who the bad apples are. We can't. In this situation, we don't know who's who. So, which is really crazy to me. Last night, people were marching, and it really irks me, and it really fired me up to really take this situation by the horns and knock it out. People were marching last night in a circle. The police blocked off the street. You can't stop walking on the street now. So people are marching literally in a big circle around the block and repeating that all night long while chanting. It looks quite insane when you witness it. And it sets up a situation for potential danger because now everyone is hoarded into the same exact circumference. And if anything happens, it's very easy to get shot or very easy to get hit with the tear gas. Like, it's really a tactical move more so than anything. The streets are blocked off. Citizens can't drive home. If you come to the protest early in the day and you park your car in a certain area, you know that there's a high chance you won't be able to get back to your car because they'll pull up their police vehicles and the tanks and all of that stuff and block it off. And after a certain point of the night, they won't even let you get to your vehicle. Last night, I left early because I knew something was about to go down. A friend of mine decided he was going to stay. He called me and he was like, man, I got to get out of here. We came in through one of the back roads. And when I pulled up, I looked over the fence because I didn't want to be spotted. And I saw the police had the entire protest wrapped cornered a McDonald's parking lot, and we're talking about hundreds of people, if not thousands. We're talking about media. We're talking about clergymen, clergywomen, with politicians, no respect of persons in this situation. And they're engaging these people with guns. It's quite insane to witness.
Let's just want Def Poe, let him finish what he was saying. But Def Poe, since we have you with us, some of our panelists, the people on my program today, the panelists, the family of Tyrone West, who was killed by the police here in Baltimore, are with us along with Adara Yira and the Reverend Kevin Slayton. You mind, because they want to interact a bit with you and talk a bit. So, and Kevin Slayton, you had a question.
Yeah, I just had a quick question.
Sure.
Once we began the discussion, you were about to say something about the police had lost their power. But as you describe it, it seems like they still had quite a bit of this power. So could you elaborate on what it is you were about to say?
Well, what I mean by that is that the people no longer care about the structure of traditional policing in that area. So, the people don't care that you can arrest them, that you can shoot them anymore. So those tactics aren't working. That's always been the measures of fear that keep us from acting out against the police. I don't want to get murdered, and I don't want to go to jail. Once you get over those two initial fears, it outwardly appears that the police don't have any power in that area. You know, that's why the young brothers don't care anymore, because I'm like, you know, you killed Mike, but that wasn't enough to stop us. That's not going to stop us. We're not going to, you can kill me if you have to. You can lock me up if you have to. There's people out there trying to register people to vote in the midst of this craziness, and you're hearing people respond with, I don't care if I die. I'm not voting no more, but I don't care if I die. And that's, you know, that's astounding.
People who have nothing to lose or who feel they have nothing to lose have nothing to lose. Can you, first of all, let me say, and this is Adar, let me say that I so appreciate all of the on-the-ground news that is coming out. I don't even read the mainstream media anymore for real news about what's coming out of Ferguson, because they're so stuck to a certain narrative. And so I appreciate what is coming out and the work that you're doing with that. How do you compare what is going on in Ferguson with what has happened in New York, what's happened in Baltimore with families like Tyrone West, what's happening all across the country that don't get the press that Ferguson is getting at this moment in time?
It's the same thing, if not worldwide, everywhere you go. It's the same thing. We're seeing that, you know, there has to be something created for when black men interact with the police that ensures our safety. In my city, the police was created as a direct response to the KKK. The police is an extension of the KKK in St. Louis, Missouri. There's laws set up to where our mayor doesn't even have control over the police force. We fought many years for local control. When they finally gave us local control, it was, you know, a watered-down version of it that was basically saying, here, you got local control of your police now. But as stands, our mayor doesn't even control our city police force. He can't really even give them orders as to what to do and when to do it. And you see similar situations like that all across the country. There's no real presence of the police in the community except for when it's time to punish us. Mm-hmm. A good friend of mine brought up a good example. He said, you know, guys in bad neighborhoods, first thing they ask you when you show up on your block is, what's your name, where your mama lives at, do you know anybody that lives over here, and what you want over here, what are you doing over here? We don't do that to the police. The police drives up and down the street every single day of your life with a gun. You don't even know your neighborhood police officer, and that's not even a culture that we promote. Mm-hmm. It's you know, when you really think about this stuff, it's almost very Willie Lynch's. It's very rooted in slavery when you think about it.
So what do you think about the concept then of community policing? Do you think that the outcome might have been different if there were a culture of policing where the police were interacting in the community not as punitive agents, but just as people getting to know people and human beings?
I definitely agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree with it. I think even on the level of the community policing itself, I think things get kind of sketchy when we start talking about that. But I think that if a group of individuals is willing to actually sit down and dedicate themselves to the task and come up with real measures and really train themselves properly and you know, approach this the right way, I think it could work. But I think even more so, while we have this current police force embedded into our neighborhoods, they really should start engaging with the neighborhood, as you just said, with creative dialogue, you know, start to humanize the people that you're policing so that when a situation does come about, you don't always have to respond with force. You know, if you know someone, things go a little bit different when you have a personalized relationship mm-hmm. with them and some trouble pops off.
Mm-hmm. So this has been a very important piece of our program, and Tefla, I'm so happy you could join us. And I want to, first of all, I think that if people want to see what's going on in Ferguson from the perspective of the community and the people who live there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you should follow what he's doing on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Tefpo is TEFPOE on Twitter, and he's tweeting from Ferguson. And the interaction going on is where the real story is living. And I want to let you know, Tefpo, that our guests here in the studio, Tawanda Jones and Harant Diana Butler, who are the sister and aunt of the young man Tyrone West, who died at the hands of the police in Baltimore last year, they've been out every week with their family on the streets, and there's a huge rally tonight. Their family's put together that is going to have solidarity with Ferguson and the people in Baltimore. That's taking place tonight, and this family is in my studio now, is organizing that rally. And I want to thank you so much for joining us.
I need to get her information if you can. Give me her information. I would love
that. Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
We will do that.
Yes.
So before what's happening, one of my producers will pick up the phone, make sure you all are in touch so we can connect, and you can tweet back and forth during the rally that's happening here with people in Ferguson and get all that connected. And, brother, I thank you so much for being with us today, and we look forward to having you back on in the coming weeks as we see what's going on. And please stay safe.
Yeah, stay safe, please, and God bless you for doing what you're doing.
Absolutely.
God bless you all, too. But before I go, I want to really say one more thing, if it's okay.
Sure.
This is a new monster that we're facing. What we're doing here in St. Louis, I feel that this is a test, because a lot of people think this is a march and we fight the power and the system crumbles type of thing. No, this is what we're witnessing is the militarization of a black neighborhood. And for us, the people on the ground, this has a lot to do with Michael Brown. It's all about Michael Brown. But I feel like for the establishment, this has nothing to do with Michael Brown. I feel like what they're doing is a test. I feel like it's a setup, and they're using this ordeal to bring in something that they're going to plan to bring in neighborhoods that are in Baltimore, Chicago, Memphis, Detroit, New York, L.A. This is going to be something that they try to take globally if we at Ferguson fail to resist this the right way.
And I just, what you said at the very top of the show, I wanted to say, just popped up on the Nation magazine's feed online, that the police in Ferguson have been spraying civilians with miscarriage-causing chemicals.
Yep.
Stuff they're using are abortive fashions, which means they cause abortions in women.
That's
the gas that's being used in Ferguson now. There was just a story breaking from the Nation magazine. So I want to say that Tefpo, what people feel sometimes and put out there, people think, oh, they're crazy, just saying this stuff. They don't know what they're saying, but the truth is what the truth is. So I appreciate you being part of this program. And before we, because we only have
thank you for having us. Thank you for speaking out.
Brother, it was good to have you with us, and we will have you back soon. And we will stay in touch.
Can I say something real fast?
Tawanda, go ahead. No, please.
I definitely want his information so me and him can communicate and things like that. But I just really feel as though all the stuff with my brother, I think these are planned attacks, and they're waiting for us to respond in a negative way.
Absolutely.
So they can do what they wanted to do. It's just like, how much are you guys are going to take before you strike back so we can strike back with our force beyond your force? This is stuff that's planned, because there's no way in the world 11 to 15 officers on one unarmed man in a community. Full. And we're not talking about like Greenmount Avenue. We're talking about like where homeowners are. Mm-hmm. Older people, younger people. And in broad daylight, you take a man out like that, They was waiting for that to happen then, but it's like, okay, nobody joined on the force of, like, protesting and holding up rights. It's just disgusting. And then I really think, and this is just my opinion, but since they hit my brother's body, we still don't have my brother's full autopsy report. It's disgusting. I swear I think they stole my brother's organs. They're hiding stuff, and I think, and it's not just with my brother. I think with other police brutality victims that are just gunned down, then they're hiding them from the family. Why don't you let the family see him? You know, we couldn't see my brother for 5 whole days, and when we saw him, his face looked like they was working on his face. It was disgusting. I knew, but the man I looked at that was laying there before he even got in the casket, before he even had clothes on, just wrapped up in the sheet, was not my brother. That was not how my brother looked. And this was before they added embalming fluid in my brother. So I'm just saying that to say we need to be really careful. They're killing us. And we need to step up, protest, and get it out. And the only thing we're forced to do is the right godly thing, and that's stay, have your voices heard, get people in that's going to really come and do their job. If Greg Bernstein didn't do his job, we had to get rid of him. Get rid of the people that are not going to do our job. It's through voting, prayer, voting, and standing, you know, standing up for what's right, not just sitting there watching on the news, being active in what's going on.
And I think what's important here, that what TEFPO is saying and what you just talked about, what happened the last year, as the responses to what's been going on in FERC and other places have been nonviolent responses. It's people standing up to be seen and heard.
Absolutely.
And they're trying to make it into this violent kind of attack. When it is not a violent attack, it's people standing up for who they are. As TEFPO was describing, people in Ferguson walking in a block, hundreds of thousands of people, and being forced and being pushed back by the police. We've seen these film clips of people just literally pushing people back who are just completely peaceable, not blocking traffic, not bothering anybody, and even pushing news people down and pushing them up and arresting and beating up Al Jazeera reporters and more. I mean, so this is...
But this isn't new.
It's
this
not.
This is not new. This we can look at news footage from the 60s and see the same thing. And the thing that we also need to do is connect it to policy options and choices. We have power that we are not using to full effect.
Yes.
And I just want to say that as we're going to go to this next week, the Baltimore Police Department admits in their own report that they waited too long to communicate and give any information to the family. In every stage of the process.
Even to when they got the report back, they didn't even tell us.
So before we have to get out of here, a final thought, Kevin, and then reminding people about the rally tonight. Kevin?
Yeah, I've been almost silent listening to this, but one, I want to get us on the same page to recognize that the treatment of the African-American male in this country, the lens has shifted to our women. And so we must be, you know, vigilant and in a better place to respond to how we protect that cultural image. And then lastly, I would just say to all of us that there comes a point, truly, where silence is betrayal. We have to begin to speak up.
Amen.
And tonight you can speak out. How's what's going to happen, Tawanda?
At City Hall, West Wednesday, we'll be out there against police brutality and in solidarity with the families in Ferguson. So come on out and join us. And I just want to say real quick before we close out, when we had that peaceful protest, we had police officers sitting on top of the roofs. Looked like they had guns pointed down, video cameraing us. For what? And it was peaceful. No time. We stayed there hours.
So I want to thank you all for being here. Meet them tonight at City Hall at 6 o'clock. Tawanda Jones, Tyrone West's sister, Diana Butler, Tyrone's West aunt, in the studio with us. Thank you both so much for being here and for standing up this whole year, Reverend Kevin Slayton.
Thank you so much.
Who is now the new pastor of the New Waverly United Methodist Church, and Adar Ayira, who is a project manager of More in the Middle Campaign for Associated Black Charities. Good to have all of you with us, and I want to thank TEFPO for joining us from Ferguson.
Thank you so much.
It's been an important program. Glad you all were with us. And we are going out with Temptations. Beauty is Only Skin Deep, released on this day in 1966. One of my favorite songs. And I love some Temptations, so let's play that as I'm talking so I can feel a bit better about what's going on in the world today. Just for a minute, anyway. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. And you can go to MeQ.com for all the information there. Find out about what they're offering. MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union offering a full range of financial services. MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. And the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Maggie Dyer, Sianna Greaves, and Sam Saper. Maggie Dyer is her last day is today. She's done an incredible job for us. Sam Saper's last day is tomorrow. He's done an incredible job for us all summer as two of our summer interns. To this show again and to podcast any of our past shows, go to our website, steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, celebrating the 88 days of summer, I'm Mark Steiner. Stay involved. Be aware. Take care.